And we're on.
The traditional Kel intro.
Yep, here you go. That's special, just for y'all.
Kel's becoming YouTube famous.
How?
So this morning I was looking at Chalk and I was like, let me see, like make sure like the Renegade Row video is the actual right video. Mm-hmm. And so I clicked on it and the shoulder overhead video popped up.
Oh, did it?
As like a recommended video. That video's got 20,000 views. Yeah.
So that one has the most views I think that we have on here.
Well, and it has to do with the fact that we put it as SEOH.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people, they'll see that acronym and not know what it means. So they YouTube it. They YouTube it.
Oh, yeah.
They're like, what the hell is SEOH? Right, and so they automatically go to YouTube to see what it is. And that's literally the first video that pops up.
It pops up, really?
And it's got 20,000 views.
That's cool. That's awesome. I think another one is like, it shows every version of shoulder overhead too. So mm-hmm. I think it helps a lot of people out probably.
And it's just a quick intro. It's no explanation as to what it is.
It just doing them.
Yeah, it just shows strict press, push press.
But I think Mary Allison said something of it. She was like, y'all know y'all have like 18,000 or something thousand views on that video. And I was like,
Yeah, it's 20,000 now.
20? That's cool. That's really
As of this morning, it's 20,000.
So it's steady going up, boys. Steady going up. We're about to monetize that.
We're going
to
get our YouTube back.
We'll get that one.
I wonder how many views you have to get on a YouTube video before you get paid.
Before you get paid? Well, I know you have to monetize it first. And then, I don't know, man. Because, I was listening to a video the other day of Mr. Beast. And obviously, he's, the biggest
YouTuber,
probably anything in the world right now. And so, he was saying, it's so hard for him to get brand deals because his videos get so many views that for them to pay him, it would be astronomical. And so they always ask him hey, there's no way I can pay you this amount of money.
So basically based off the views is what the deal would be.
Exactly.
Okay, so
right?
If the video gets X amount of views, we'll pay you.
Correct.
Okay, pay you X amount of pure views.
X amount of money, right? And so Mr. Beast is like, dude, I'm getting 200 million views on this video. I want to get paid for 200 million views. I'm getting more views than the Super Bowl, so I should be getting paid like that. And so now what he's having to do is he's just making, I don't know if you've seen, probably seen the chocolate bars and the burgers and all that type of stuff.
I know he has a burger restaurant.
Yeah, and so he just made a chocolate bar also. And so now instead of getting all these brand deals, he's just screw it. Y'all are going to pay me my money, and so I'm just going to make my own and sponsor myself.
Well, if you're getting 200 million views.
That's ridiculous.
I've never really watched any of these videos, though.
I've never really done it. I know my brother was big into them because they used to do, all these challenges and stuff. Mm-hmm. They would literally, stick these five guys in a room and say, all right, last person in the room gets $1 million. And so they would literally stay there for 6-7 days, and then finally they would move. I remember one was, they had a jet on a strip, a real-ass private jet on a landing strip, and they said, all right, everybody put your hand on it. And there was six celebrities. They all put their hand on the jet and said, last one to take your hand off of it. You can either win the jet or get it was $200,000, right? And so they're sitting there doing all this. And then all of a sudden, Mr. Beast comes in and goes, hey, here's my credit card. It's got a $10,000 limit on it. You can just have it. If whoever wants to take it right now, take it. And so one guy goes, all right, takes his hand off the jet, takes the credit card, leaves, goes to use the credit card. And then everybody else stays and just tries to win the jet.
Oh my god.
I was like, that is crazy, dude.
He's got some interesting videos, but yeah, he's by far the biggest YouTuber, I think, right now.
Gotta be. I think when he opens.
Well, I wonder how much YouTube itself actually pays you. Because they do pay people based off how many subscribers you have. Because, that pulls people onto YouTube, sure. And then they get ad money from YouTube.
Yeah.
Or YouTube gets ad money.
For instance, one of the games that I play, there's a guy on there. He's not even a bigger. Guy, but he gets $20,000 to $40,000 a month, and so that's just a month, right? And so he doesn't even talk in his videos; it's just him playing a game. That's all he does. And so there's people out there that probably make bank.
Well, don't they have Twitch or something like that?
Twitch, yeah. And so
it's literally people streaming themselves playing a video,
literally.
People watch.
Yep,
that's so weird.
It's weird, and so I used to think it's weird. But a lot of those guys, they're not just playing a game. There's some guys that literally will talk about sports the whole time they're playing.
So it's like a sports podcast.
Kind of. And so you find people that do that kind of stuff. There's some people that literally just
are they just shooting the shit
off
the cuff.
So they have a chat, right? So it's, let's say you're streaming, right? So you're streaming to your computer, wherever you're streaming to, but on their computer, they'll have a chat, right?
Well, kind of like a YouTube live stream
exactly.
or a Facebook
live
stream.
People are commenting on it, but the really good Twitch streamers, pay attention so much to that chat that like they're constantly answering a question and engaging. And so like I think it keeps other people like, oh shit, he answered my question, right? Mm-hmm. And so like he's probably gonna type something else. And then also the amount of donations those guys got, I mean, it's ridiculous.
So people were just paying them, just like, hey, we'll give $5.
So like, I used to watch this guy, Nick Merckx. I don't know if you've heard of him or not, but he's a pretty big guy. He's a big sports guy, big working out guy. So like, he even streams his workouts. Like, he'll stream his workouts, put all his works out. Dude, people do it. People do his workout. Like, hundreds of thousands of people do these workouts. And it's just bodybuilding workouts. But he does all this stuff, and kind of the deal with him is like, he's so big now that like, I'll be on there, if you're watching a stream, there'll be like $1,000 donations. Just like, roll.
Who is giving this guy $1,000? Just Rand, because.
Rand, just because, dude. Like, he would have some people come in there. I was in there one time. I lied. He did a YouTube short. So it was like a short of all his biggest donations from the month. Ridiculous. People just throw in like $5,000, $10,000.
Doesn't make any sense to me why you would give somebody $5,000 you don't even know.
It's incredible. And I don't understand it. I don't understand that part. I'm like, I don't know why you would.
If you think about that logically, if you could tell somebody 15 years ago, you can literally, somebody's going to pay you thousands of dollars. People are going to pay you randomly thousands of dollars as you work out and watch your workout.
Crazy.
For no, you're not really providing any value.
Nothing. You're just doing it.
You're just like, you're filming yourself working out and people are just going to shoot you $1,000.
He literally has created his own like little army. It's called MFAM. And so that's the name of it. And like, he has like a logo, like a mascot. He has like whole groups, like group chats, like, so like everybody in the whole MFAM has like a group chat together. And there's not like 1,000 people in this thing. It's like hundreds of thousands of people in this damn thing. Ridiculous, dude. Like, the how big Twitch people are is crazy.
That's so,
it's ridiculous.
Well, I remember there was this, I remember seeing this one guy. I forgot what, I was like, was this a ninja dude? Oh, he has like the,
yeah, so back in the day, yeah, for sure.
Like, he made like the most money.
He started like, he was like kind of like the pioneer. Oh, not, I would say pioneer, but one of the pioneers probably.
They kind of started all that?
Sure.
And I'm guessing he was like one of the best gamers
at the time. For sure.
And so, because I remember seeing like a quick documentary on him, because he was making like over $1 million per year just playing video games. And
so that's nothing.
It's nothing now, nothing. But at the time it was a lot of money. Yeah. And I mean, he was literally playing video games from like 8 to 12 hours a day.
Mm-hmm. There's a Twitch streamer that just recently, like, dude, they're getting paid contracts like MLB players.
That's so, it's crazy.
Like, so like, some people are now leaving Twitch and going to like Bumble or like whatever these other streaming companies are, and or like KickPick's another one that just kind of popped up. And Kick pays this guy, his name's Kai Sinat. I want to say upwards of like $100-something million for like a contract. And then also, he is part owner of this streaming company. And so now he gets like incentives for every other person that joins and starts streaming and all the money they get too. And so it's becoming a deal now where you're going to start seeing, I think, streamers be like some of the richest and like biggest celebrities in the world.
You think eventually in time that overtakes like sports in general?
No, but I mean, dude, now you can bet on it.
Sports? Like esports?
Like esports. You can bet on that shit now. Like, and so, I don't know how you...
Well, I remember, I don't know if it's still a thing anymore, but they were having colleges have esports.
Yeah, dude. High schools now. High schools, colleges.
Have esports
teams. They
all
have teams. Like, Clemson, Bama, LSU, they all have teams for... And not just one team. It's like, there's so many games. They have, like, so many different teams for each game. And so, it's crazy, dude. It's becoming a whole sport. Like,
this is
a sport.
And this is maybe because I'm like, I guess, around that young side of the older generation, mm-hmm. I guess. I don't know, just, it's blows a mind.
It's crazy, dude. Or, like, when we go to, like, family events, all the kids, that's all they do. That's the, they
that's what I'm saying.
Watch,
like, it's
streaming, and they just watch gaming. That's all they do.
It's so crazy.
Because I'm like, how are you even good at the game? And you're just watching these.
You're just watching people play.
You don't even literally play.
I mean, I guess it's not unfathomable. I mean, you watch people play baseball or football.
Well, no, like, you probably learn things, you pick up on things, right?
That's what they're trying to do.
You also gotta play the shit to get good at it and practice the thing. You know, it's crazy, dude.
It just seems ridiculous.
It seems ridiculous. Now, I'm not gonna lie, but like, pay me $100 million to
play a video game.
I don't care if I hate the video game. I play the thing.
But I mean, it's a full time job. I mean, those guys are playing for like a 10 hours a day.
Sure. And the Kai Snap dude I talked about, he doesn't even play games. They have a house with like five other guys and they just do content together. Like, so he'll just
What do you mean?
He literally sits in a chair and talks to the chat all day.
About what?
Every and anything. And like,
what makes him so, but what my question is why is he a person that people want to listen to?
I think he's just like,
what is his background for people to be like, that's a dude, like he's a role model of mine.
Literally, he's just so crazy and funny and just like does
so just entertaining
and entertaining and like
they like a Pat McAfee
kind of, but like they have their whole house is like they all have their own roles, like they all do stuff together and like skits together.
You're gonna
like,
have to show me because it's kind of crazy, it's weird to me.
Like they have one guy on there in that house and he pretty much like has an eating disorder. Not an eating disorder, but like he loves food so much, right? And so his deal is like he'll order on DoorDash. And he'll order everything on the menu on DoorDash. And he just eats it. And that's what he does. That's literally what he does. And now, like, it's a big
deal. That's like his niche. Like, everybody watches that.
Food. Like, food is like his niche. And so, like, he just does food. And, like, he brings, like, hibachi grills in. And they have hibachi grill in his house. And, like, all kind of crazy stuff. And now it's, like, crazy because he's doing, like, a diet thing. And so everybody's losing their mind over it right now.
What do you mean? Like, he's trying to lose weight?
Yeah. So
is like, he a big dude?
I mean, he's probably like my height, but he's probably a good like 250, 260.
Okay, so he's not humongous.
No, he's not humongous, okay. But you could tell like boy likes to eat.
Okay.
But dude, it's nuts. I'll have to show you after. It's crazy.
That doesn't seem whatever. Whatever. Christmas party.
Christmas party's coming up. I'm excited about that one. I always like the Christmas party.
What are people saying about the theme?
I mentioned it yesterday, and there's lots of laughs at the whiteboard. So okay. I don't know. I think people are already kind of like scheming up what they're going to do.
Because I feel like with the, it's kind of those things like we're kind of talking about the age generation gap there mm-hmm. a little bit. And I think people from like 40 and younger are all about it. And everybody who's like 40 and older is like, that's gay.
Screw this.
You're going to make me dress like a girl. We got plenty of that going around that. Right now. I ain't dressed up like no girl.
I even thought about that too when you said it, but I was like, nah, screw all that. I don't care.
But I mean, it sets the vibe for the party for sure. Because the things that we're kind of playing around with were first one was going to be like possibly like an Egyptian theme, mm-hmm. a sports theme. And then this one kind of came up last second. We're dressed like your spouse or like a coach. Because we didn't want anybody to feel left out because obviously you don't have like a spouse of some kind.
Sure.
We want to feel like you can't come to the party. And so, but that was definitely the funnest of the things because you can kind of poke fun at each other.
Absolutely.
And that's kind of the point.
I think a lot of, like, even saw, like Lakin was, like, huddled up with, like, four other people yesterday.
Talking about
all talking about what they're going to do and, like, laughing. And, like, they're telling me to get the hell away because they don't want to ruin it. And I'm like, oh, Lord, I can't even imagine.
Jesus. I got to get a – you ever seen those videos, those guys, where they get, like, the five-gallon bucket, mm-hmm. put the lid, the PVC pipe straw in it. It makes it look like a Stanley.
Oh, that's good, that would be hilarious
because every damn girl's got those damn Stanley cups.
Every coach here, every girl coach at least has a Stanley cup.
For sure. Kaylee has one.
Those things are so popular too right now.
Well, Kaylee, I got Kaylee one of those was it Simply Modern or something like that?
Simply Modern.
It's basically a different version of the Stanley.
Okay.
But I got her one for her birthday, I think, something like that. She uses that all the freaking time.
What a nice guy.
Good husband right over here, you know. And so I was interested to see kind of what the vibe was. So I definitely think it's going to set the precedent for the party itself.
Oh, I think so. Like, I think I want to come as Miss James.
Oh, yeah?
I think so. I don't know who, but I think so far I think that's what I want to do. Heidi was trying to get people to come as her yesterday.
Oh, God.
She's lobbying up.
Last year went off the rails so fast.
So fast. That was, at least in my opinion, I think that was the fastest it's ever gone off.
I want to say it was definitely within an hour and a half.
Because we didn't even do the dang
White Elephant. Which I was like,
I'm not even handing stuff off.
Which I didn't even do that this year. I was like, I'm not even going to. Because last year it went off the rails so quick. I'm like, I'm not even going to force people to play that this year. So I'm not even going to worry about that. But I want to say within like the first hour to hour and a half. I remember looking around. I don't know who I was standing by. I think it was like 7:30, 8 o'clock. And I was looking around. I was like, oh my
God. Dude, the lights went off at like 7. And as soon as the lights went off at like 7:15, I was like, oh, it's
as soon as one of those lights, that's when it goes. It goes from like kind of formal,
yeah,
to you know, everybody shaking hands, hey buddy, how you doing, to everybody shaking ass.
literally this is how it works. Everybody's huddled up in the front of the gym by the front desk for the most part, mm-hmm. the food and everything, probably sure. the first like 30 minutes. And then as soon as people start traveling down the floor, it's over. It's over. Everything starts going crazy. But it's fun. It's always a fun time. That's my favorite party that y'all do. So I enjoy the hell out of it.
That one's the most popular party. For like sure. We usually do the pool party and we do this one. And this one is definitely the most popular one of the two mm-hmm. that we normally do. Pool party is always fun. But it's
pool
just,
party's fun.
But I guess maybe the lure, like the pool party and like being by a pool, some people aren't about that. And so that one doesn't have as big of a group of people that show mm-hmm. for that one, but still a good time. But this one, it's one of those things where people usually talk about it for a full year until
like,
the next
literally, one. Literally, I don't think anybody has stopped talking. Every day, you probably hear about it at least once.
At least once a week yeah. about something about the Christmas party. And I had to make sure I threw in there like nobody yakking on the bathroom floor
I
again.
I saw that. I thought that was a nice little touch. That was a little bit of our time last year.
Kaylee, she texts me after I posted. She goes, I'm not pregnant this year, but I'm still not helping out if somebody throws up.
The only good thing last year, there's a lot of people that helped. So there's a lot of people that
Trey
helped.
Duffel was so wasted at that time. And he's in there trying to help us clean it up. And he's wiping the same spot
for
10
over.
Minutes. I said, Trey, please just get out the hell of the way. You've literally been wiping the same spot for 10 minutes and you're in my fucking way. Get out of the bathroom stall.
Because we were like, God, I'm not going to
the amount of
throw up over the podcast, but like we literally had a squeegee in that stuff.
We literally had to throw soapy buckets of water. Jeez. Like literally, it probably took us 30 minutes to clean it all
up. Oh, I guarantee you it was closer to an hour.
It is ridiculous.
We were in there for a while.
All right. Anyways, I guess more to the topic at hand. November/December straight cycle.
Straight cycle. Long straight cycle.
Well, specifically just for the back squat and the bench press.
Yeah.
So the idea. So when I was kind of scheming up the strength cycle going into November, because inevitably what ends up happening as we kind of get into that back half of November into December. Mm-hmm. It's like this common thing that from November to January 1st is kind of like a weird lull there where, you know, people are taking vacation time, going on trips, you know, doing a bunch of holiday things. And so obviously training for a lot of people ends up kind of getting on the back burner during that time frame. So the idea was to, I think a lot of people like the back squat and bench press.
Sure.
And surprisingly, I think a lot of girls still like the bench press. Not all girls.
I think but so.
That's probably like a 50-50 shot.
I think so.
I think probably...
And we talked about that the other day. It's like, I think it makes them feel good.
Yeah. Like, I think 50% of the girls hate it. 50% of the girls love it. And then for the guys, it's probably like an 80-20.
Yeah.
Like 80% of the guys love it.
Sure.
And maybe 20% hate it.
I feel like... That might be lowballing it. Yeah.
And then I think a lot of... Pretty much across the board, people like back squats.
Obviously, I think everybody... If they don't like back squats, they know the benefits of a back squat, and so you end up enjoying
it. It's like one of those main lists, if you PR, it's really motivating. And so the idea being, if we go on a strength cycle, that will go all the way up until the week before Christmas, mm-hmm. might give them or give you more motivation to actually show up and put the training in to try to hit that PR the week of or week before Christmas going into it. Matt Bell.
Oh, not
Matt Bell there.
Not a
gender. Huh? No, that was Matt Bell. Matt Bell coming in the office. So that was kind of the idea behind it. So essentially, the back squat and the bench press will run from this next week starting October 30th, and then it'll run all the way up till that week before Christmas.
Okay.
With that max out being the week before Christmas. So essentially about 8 weeks in all is what we're going to end up doing. And the strength cycle will inevitably basically be 1 week will be heavy, and then 1 week will be more of a moderate volume, like probably like 6 to 10 reps at a heavy weight for that rep range. So, but and then 1 week will be like 3 to 5, right?
Okay.
And we'll kind of bounce back and
bounce
forth.
From higher volume to lower volume.
Yep, exactly. But essentially that's what we'll kind of work our way through all the way up until, so you know, Monday you'll always see back squat, Tuesday you'll always see bench press.
And that always keeps it fresh too, though. Like that way, like every week to week, like they're not doing the same rep scheme, you know?
Yeah, the rep scheme will change from week to week. It's not doing the same thing over and over and over again. And it actually will be percentage based.
Oh, cool.
Because the last few strength cycles, we haven't really done percentage work. So this will actually be based off your percentages of your best bench press and back squat.
Okay.
Let me ask this. Do people like the consistency of the strength cycle, or they like the randomization better?
I think people enjoy it because it's easier to keep track of.
Mm-hmm.
And I think doing 4-week cycles like that is okay. I don't think people get overwhelmed or like get too crazy about it. Now, I think if you were to do an 8-week cycle like that, I think people would be like, all right, this is ridiculous. Like,
so you think, how do you think people are going to react to this back squat bench press?
I think it'd be good because you're doing the alternating thing. Mm-hmm. Anytime you're like changing reps and like sets and like weights and stuff.
So it's more the monotony of like if we did sets of 8 on everything.
Exactly. Like if you did 3 sets of 8 every Tuesday on mm-hmm. back squat for 8 weeks. I don't know if people will continue to show
Now, up. The percentages will change and the volume will change from mm-hmm. week to week, but obviously the movement will not.
Sure.
And it's just going to be those one singular movements. So we're not pairing it up.
You're not having like a superset or anything.
No, it's just going to be those one individual.
Which is good for those movements.
Because they're big.
Trying to optimize everything.
Yeah, trying to optimize for those two particular lifts. Wednesday, which we kind of talked about this, is the chest bar.
Mm-hmm. Pull-up. I think a lot of people are going to like that day.
I'd be interested to see how it goes. Because with the, especially the butterfly chest bar, mm-hmm. seems to be one of those unicorn movements that a lot of people have a hard time getting.
Grasping
at.
I think that's one of the harder ones.
What, chest bars?
Like butterfly chest bar,
especially.
To me, at least.
I feel like a lot of people butterfly for a long time and never get chest butterflies.
It's such a different kip and like pull. And I don't know. And timing, it's a whole different pull up to me.
Mm-hmm. So I felt like this past strength cycle with the bar muscle up was pretty successful. Mm-hmm. I know for sure, at least off the top of my head, I know we can at least get 3 people off the top of my head. I know we got their first bar muscle up, if not more.
Man. What? Last night, Maddie, literally on top of the bar in the dip position two different times and would literally just roll back.
Like literally on top of the bar.
Cody, when I tell you,
and just fell backwards.
In the most perfect dip position you could be in two different times and just feet went over the bar and just fell back. And I'm like, I'm more frustrated than you are, Maddie.
Was she getting pissed?
I don't think she was pissed, but after the workout, she was like, I walked to her and was like, we got to get that bar muscle. Like, we're so close. That's the best I've ever seen you do so far. And she was like, oh, I'm going to get it this week. And so I think she's pretty pumped up about it.
Okay.
She can kind of see it in the future. So
let me ask this. Do you feel like some people who have bar muscle ups improved on their bar muscle ups?
I think so. Like, I know for sure, like off the top of my head, I could probably name at least 2 or 3 people mm-hmm. for sure.
I've even had like Lacey or Jennifer kind of compliment saying, you know, what's his name? His bar muscle has gotten a lot better mm-hmm. because of the strength cycle and things.
I know, like, you know, for instance, like Taylor Butler, like, mm-hmm. dude literally does singles no matter what, mm-hmm. right? And I mean, we got him to do 3-4 in a row now.
Yeah.
And so, like, just him, for instance, I know, like, for instance, Crystal, I know she's never done 2 before. She got 2. I think Haley
got 2.
She got 2. I think Haley got 3. I know Lindsay Steffens got another bar muscle up.
Nice.
Amber got one
Amber
yesterday.
Tepper. Bryce got his first bar muscle.
Bryce got one. Peyton got one. Peyton got 2. So there was a bunch of people that if they already had them, they ended up leveling up to like 2 or 3.
Nice.
Or people maybe just got their first one.
Nice.
But I think a lot of people enjoyed that cycle. Even people that weren't even able to do bar muscles. I think it was fun for them to learn the jump to hollow and learn the hip shoot.
Well, I saw a lot of people were just trying to like learn the movement itself, even though they knew they weren't going to get one, we're just trying to learn the movement.
And by the way, I also noticed a lot of y'all doing jump to hollows and hip shoots because y'all didn't want to do strict pull up next. So don't think I didn't notice that. All right. But no, I do think a lot of people enjoyed that one a lot.
So the butterfly, so the thing is, so like we have like these prerequisites kind of set for. Like the bar muscle up, we usually say about 8 to 10 strict pull ups mm-hmm. is the general gold numbers you're trying to hit for strict pull ups before you're able to advance to doing a bar muscle up. Mm-hmm. Just to have the general pulling strength and the scapular control to not get injured is kind of that number that we look for before you can kind of advance into that strict bar muscle up. And kind of like on the lower end of that, we at least want a strict pull up to be able to do a kipping pull up.
Sure.
Right? So you shouldn't be doing kipping pull ups, you can't do a strict pull up. I would say with the butterfly pull-up, it's kind of like in between. So like being able to do like 4 to 5 strict pull-ups, good control strict pull-ups, is more your golden key to get to a butterfly pull-up.
Sure.
Right? Because with a kip compared to a butterfly, it's a lot more force on the shoulders coming through that bar. And there's a way likely chance that you're going to crash down into the bottom. So if you don't have the prerequisite strength to control your scaps and keep your shoulder stable, the likelihood of your injury rate is being a lot higher, right? So if you are listening to this and you're trying to, or you want to get butterfly pull-ups, you have to be able to do like close to 5 good strict pull-ups before you can advance to that portion. If you can do a strict pull-up, or maybe you can do like 2 or 3, just keep working that strict pulling power, or work on this, keep getting more efficient at your kip itself. I would still, during the strength cycle, probably continue to keep working on strict pulling power. Right? So we're going to change it up slightly for those guys who aren't in that boat just yet, where you guys will do like moderate volume reps of probably like between 6 and 10 reps with the band, but still control lower with those volumes.
Just force.
Yeah. So with the butterfly chest bar pull-up, once again, we're going to try to give you guys drills as best as possible to learn the butterfly kip or the butterfly chest bar pull-up. And the thing is, like, it's not as easily broken down as the bar muscle-up.
It's a lot harder to coach a butterfly chest bar than any other pulling motion to me.
Yeah. I mean, compared to, like, the bar muscle-up.
There's so many moving parts.
Well, with the butterfly chest bar, it's kind of one of those things where it really comes down to knowing how much force you have to pull with, right? Because the movement of the butterfly pull-up and the butterfly chest bar, the movement itself is relatively the same. It's just now the force of which you have to pull changes, right? And so the force of what your body has to whip around the bar has now increased. And so it's kind of one of those things of breaking that butterfly pull-up down and then learning under non-fatigue setting on what that proper pull sequence is. Because essentially when you come through that arch and you're coming back around, you're going to lead with a big toe movement, and then it goes from toe to hip, and then you extend your chest and make contact with the bar.
Pulling the elbows back.
And it's that skimming motion, right? And ideally, you should be making contact on your lower chest, like almost by your sternum to a degree. So it's almost, and you're almost kind of hitting it as you kind of slightly come down from that circular motion of the butterfly. So
you're not just on the way down.
On the way, as you come down slightly. Yes. So it's like as you come, so you think like a circle. It's essentially what a butterfly pull-up is, right? And as you're getting to the top portion of that circle and you're coming back around to that front part of that bar, the front half of that circle, is when you're hitting the bar on the way downward. And it's not like you're getting like a crazy high above the bar, but as you're arcing slightly above the bar and skimming it as you come through, right? So it's essentially you're getting into that. You leave the toe, you then leave the hip, and then as you extend the back and pull your shoulder blades back, you make that skimming motion happen. But a lot of times what people don't realize is that the biggest difference between the chest of the bar and a chin of the bar is the elbow angle.
Yeah.
So
that's one of the bigger ones.
So when I'm doing a chin of the bar pull-up, my elbow angle really never goes past my torso. But with a chest of bar, my elbow actually has to be all the way behind that torso to actually make contact, where I'm having to pull my shoulder blades back. So for some people, they actually may lack that last bit of in-range of motion through the rhomboids and through their scaps and their lats to actually be able to pull their chest to that bar. So that's one thing that's going to allow you guys, when we're trying to practice that chest bar, is accumulating reps is with that actual making contact will help strengthen that in range, right? So, and a lot of times it's just a matter of just practicing skill or enough volume, because a lot of times you guys will try to do it in a wad and you're way too fatigued to do that. You got to do it in a non-fatigue setting to actually get the rhythm down and actually build that strength. And after you do it over a period of time, you can then start to advance that movement to more of a conditioning setting to actually be able to do that when it actually counts on a wad.
So how many butterfly normal pull-ups would you say
compared to like a chest bar?
Translate to like a, let's say like if somebody can do a certain amount of butterfly pull-ups, you think confidently you could probably get them to do a butterfly chest bar.
So if they can do like 10 unbroken butterfly pull-ups?
Yeah, what do you think that number would be?
If you can probably do 10 butterfly pull-ups and they're like really good solid butterfly pull-ups, probably 2 to 4 maybe.
2 to 4? Because I was thinking in my head, I was like, for somebody maybe just able to do like maybe 5 butterfly pull-ups, I think it would still probably be pretty tough for somebody to maybe do a butterfly chest.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like,
I think you have to be somewhat confident and like comfortable in a butterfly pull-up to be able to pull it off for chest bars.
Yeah, if you're doing like 5 butterfly pull-ups and you're Like, it's one of those butterfly pull-ups where you can kind of tell they're barely getting above the bar, and there's a lot of broken positions just because due to the lack of strength they have, that they're trying to use more hip or more leg for lack of pulling power that they have. They're trying to use these other body parts to help get them above the bar. The likelihood of getting a chest bar is probably not as high, right? What I mean by like 10 really good butterfly pull-ups, like they're getting over the bar, they're really tight body positions. There's not a lot of wasted movement. There's not a lot of wasted movement there. Then you can probably say, okay, now we're probably looking at 5 or less chest bar pull-ups. But like I said, if you're only getting like 5-3 butterfly chest or butterfly pull-ups in general, and they're not very pretty pull-ups, you're going to have to continue to keep working on your strict pulling power and keep improving upon the normal butterfly pull-up. And that's something we can still work on. And we can talk about some drills like that. Because I think the biggest thing with people when they're doing the butterfly pull-up is like, especially from the lower half, like how broken they are.
Yeah.
There's a lot of separation of the legs, a lot of breaking of the knees and things of that nature, where ideally in most of your domestic movements, the tighter is lighter. So if you see somebody has really good butterfly pull-ups, really pretty butterfly pull-ups, is that their lower half is staying pretty connected, mm-hmm. and they're having those good arch and hollow body positions throughout the movement. Somebody who doesn't is in this constant broken state where they're constantly these knees bent position, the knees are flailing all over the place. And even though they have the rhythm of the movement down, there's just a lot of wasted energy kind of happening there. So it's kind of one of those things where we're going to have to kind of find that sweet spot for everybody. You know, the first week might be a little hectic as we try to get people kind of situated. But once again, if you guys don't have any interest in doing butterfly pull-ups or working on chest bar pull-ups or getting a kipping pull-up, then continue to keep working on strict pulling power. I know we say that a lot, and sometimes you guys listen and don't listen for that, but it's only going to benefit you more in the future. There's a fine line, It's one of those things where you're just because you can get kipping pull-ups doesn't make your strict pull-ups better.
Sure.
The more strict pull-ups you get, the better your kipping will become.
It always goes back down to the base or the foundation, right?
Like, I've never met anybody who increased their kipping pull-ups and then increased their strict pull-ups on top of that. Yeah. It's always been vice versa. If you have 3 strict pull-ups and you can get to like 6 or 7 strict pull-ups, I guarantee your kipping will look a lot better and be a lot more efficient, mm-hmm. because you have that prerequisite strength. There's a reason why there's a bigger pool of guys who can do butterflies and bar muscles compared to the girls. It's because the guys naturally can do more strict pull-ups. And so I think especially the girls, they have a bad habit of just wanting to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And in the process, you know, they're doing singles all the way through all their kipping pull-ups. And it's like, if you could kind of take a little time to work your way backwards and just focus on getting that strict pulling power, it would benefit you a lot more. But the problem is, I find with a lot of the females is they might take that advice, like, okay, I'll do strict pull-ups. But they always use the same color band.
Sure.
Like, I'm always going to use green band. Like, you're going to have to work your way down that band resistance, right? Or they're always like, oh, I'm just going to do supine rows, which is nothing wrong with doing supine rows. But like, you're going to have to find those progressions to move you forward. Because I feel like there are a lot of girls who want to do kipping pull-ups, things of that nature. And so they'll take their advice and do the strict work. But then they just kind of get into that groove of using a certain way they do it. And then they don't ever advance it. And this is where a coach comes to play and like bouncing ideas and using that coach to get a better understanding of when you should adjust and when you shouldn't adjust. Because there are times when, you know, every workout's a little bit different, where we might have a workout that has 15 pull-ups and this workout has 30 pull-ups. Right, where you still need to have that conversation with your coach, like, hey, I've been using a green band for like the past like 2 months. I understand there's a lot of more pull-ups today than what we normally do. Do you suggest I go down a band?
Mm-hmm.
And probably in that particular case scenario, like, hey, just for today, I probably wouldn't do that just yet. But then like the next time pull-ups come around, like, hey, I've been doing green band pull-ups. Do you suggest I go down? Like, hey, today's a great opportunity to do red and orange,
mm-hmm.
right? And there might be, you know, a 2 month period where you're nothing but green, and you have a 2 month period where you bounce from green and then red and orange,
right?
And kind of, and you bounce around how much volume is accumulated in that particular workout. And then you go 2 months of trying to do just red and orange.
I think that's another thing people should probably understand, is like, volume makes the biggest difference. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, if there's 5 pull-ups compared to 20 pull-ups. That could be a green band for 20 pull-ups, but that could also be maybe just a red and orange band like you're saying for 5. Mm-hmm. And I think if people were to start maybe paying more attention to that, I think they would see a lot more benefits in the long run.
So I feel like the rig is always the most sought after movements for people.
Sure.
It's always those hangy movements like the pull up or the totem ball or the bar muscle.
Such a focal point of CrossFit gyms. Like, I mean, the rig. Like, mm-hmm. You walk in and the rig is like probably the first thing that you see.
Yeah, the most prominent thing.
And so I think it makes people want to. And also, it's the coolest. It's some of the coolest things.
It's more of a sexier movement.
Yeah. And so I think it's the same thing as like if you walked into a gymnastic gym and saw everybody handstand walking, like mm-hmm. the first thing you want to do is buy handstand walking.
So I don't feel like nearly the amount of people come up to you and say, hey, I want to get my first handstand push-up.
No.
Everybody's always asking to get their first pull-up or bar muscle-up. Or
you know what's one that I've noticed, or one movement at least, that I've been noticing from week to week is more people are kind of stepping out a little bit is dips. I see way more people with med balls and feet extended or feet propped up.
So real quick rant on the dip. If you guys are modifying your dips, they need to be set to a low dip station, especially if we're doing the med ball with the ring.
Sure.
The ring itself should be to the knees. Like, it's how low I want it to be.
I tell people this all the time.
And it blows their mind. Anytime I tell people, like,
it shocks them.
Yeah, so, like, what?
Are you sure? Are you sure it needs to be as low? I'm like, just put it to your knees and mm-hmm. you're going to be okay.
Yes. And inevitably, when they do it, they're like, oh my God, these are way harder. Yes. Because now you're actually having to support the way the alignment of where the body's actually, the weight of the body is now right over the ring. It's like it would be in a normal ring mm-hmm. dip. When you're in a more of a vertical position and your feet are now in front of you, the weight is not directly over the rings anymore. It's kind of like towards, like, actually if your legs are in front, like more of your thighs mm-hmm. than it is actually over the rings, or your center of mass is. And when you actually have those rings low and from your hips to your shoulders are in line with the rings, now all that weight's actually in the rings now. And not on the, like,
outside.
Like in your thighs or the knee area. Also, you're not supporting your full body weight, but that's kind of the point.
Yeah.
Is we're just reducing the load on that. Now, like, Liz had a good question yesterday where she was kind of asking a question where she had the low set of rings. And she's like, well, will it be tougher? Would this be tougher? Or doing like a matador dip, like a full matador dip
full
be tougher?
Matador.
And I said,
that's a good question.
And it's probably a good question. I would probably say like a full matador dip would still be a little bit more difficult to compared to having feet elevated ring. So that might be a little bit of a bridge between like a ring dip and then like a modified ring dip would be like the matador dip. In between, like a full matador dip would still be tough and then go into a full ring dip. Because the reason why the ring dip is obviously more difficult is because the instability compared to the matador, which is more stable. So that would probably be a good bridge over is if you've been doing med ball ring dips and you're like, okay, what's the next step for? Because these are getting a little bit easier for me now, but the ring dip is still too difficult. Try to do matador dips, full on matador dips, like no feet supported. And then start working your way into a ring dip from there. Probably your best option. But yeah, it's always one of those things where people are always amazed that you had to set them up so low.
Mind blown.
I don't know what it is. But anyways, what were we talking about before?
We were on...
Oh, you're talking about how people want to do hanging movements and whatnot. You're saying how many people are actually trying to push the ring dips a little mm-hmm. bit more. And I think it's kind of, I'd probably say secondary. It's like everything inside the rig.
Yeah.
It's like everything outside the rig you don't find is like crucial. I know. Like nobody comes up to you.
It's so weird because like when I first joined, it was like all I wanted to do was handstand walk and handstand push up mm-hmm. and do double unders and like do all that kind of stuff. Like I was like, nah, I don't really want to do the rig. And then now it's like literally total opposite.
I learned how to do a butterfly pull-up before I learned how to do a kipping pull-up.
I never did a kipping pull-up.
To this day, I've never actually done a kipping pull-up in a workout.
Really? See, that's...
Yeah, I know how to do them. I know, obviously, just by teaching people and whatnot, that was one thing I learned further down the road, but because I was so invested in learning how to do a butterfly right out from the get-go... I learned how to do that before learning how to do that.
And I think a lot of older CrossFitters, I think that's kind of probably how most mm-hmm. of them went.
Dude, I still can remember working at Spar in the weight room, and I was trying to do butterfly pull-ups on, like, the cable fly machine that has, like, the pull-up bar in the middle.
Oh. Did you have separate handlebars?
Yes.
Yes?
Yes, with the rubber handles
not
on there.
One bar?
And dude, I remember going into the racquetball courtroom at Spar and putting a towel down and trying to teach myself how to do kipping handstand pushups.
Kipping handstand pushups
in the racquetball court.
Okay, that's pretty.
I put a towel down trying to learn how to do them.
Dude, I would do handstand pushups and like strict press, literally every day when I first started CrossFit. Like, if every day, and also
were you automatically naturally good at vertical pressing though?
I mean, like, I think like my freshman year of high school, like I out strict pressed everybody on football teams.
Okay, yeah. So you've always
so
been
like good I've been pretty pressing. Good at like pressing, I think. And so I think that was just something fun for me to do.
Right? Sure, you're already good at it.
So you're good at it, so you like to be really good at it. Yeah. And dude, I remember doing that stuff literally like 4 or 5 times a week, like a lot.
4 to 5.
Like I would do wall balls, no kidding, at CSC. Like I swear, like at least 4 times a week.
Because you hated wall balls, or why?
Because I loved them.
Oh, he just
liked
it.
I liked wall balls so much. I loved wall balls.
Well, I don't. When people say they hate thrusters but like wall balls,
doesn't make sense to me.
Oh, it's the same movement.
It's the same movement. It's just heavier. I don't know. Like, I've never minded thrusters, but I loved wall balls, and I still love wall balls. I don't know what it is about them, but I think just because it's one of the moves you do such high volume with, mm-hmm. and not like put so much stress like on your body, mm-hmm. I loved it. I love that.
Well, the fact is, if I gave you a 20-pound dumbbell,
sure.
I said, all right, you're going to squat this.
Dude, that's different. I think that's different. Yeah. I think if you gave me a 20-pound wall ball and a 20-pound wall ball, how many you think you do more with? Like, squats-wise.
Like, unbroken?
Yeah. I think it's pretty close. Know.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I mean, the amount of force you have to squat with the wall ball is way higher.
Way higher. Like, let's say...
You have to put more force into each wall ball compared to how much...
Like, throwing at the wall ball is what's probably making your legs probably blow up the most, right?
Well, yeah, compared to you just telling me a 20-pound goblet squat.
Yep.
Right? Like, if it... Like, hey, you got to do 300 goblet squats with a 20-pound dumbbell. I feel like I would get done with that faster than I would 300 wall balls.
Well, let's say I take your twin and I put y'all side by side on the wall.
Mm-hmm.
And I gave one a dumbbell and one a wall ball.
Yeah.
And you had the person on the dumbbell had to keep the same pace as the wall ball.
I don't know. I still feel like I would do more with the goblet squat.
See, I think total opposite. I think if you were to give me a wall ball and then a 20-pound dumbbell and I had to keep the same pace as a wall baller, I think I would die out.
No, I don't think I would.
You don't think so? You think you could continue that pace for the whole time?
No. I think I could. I feel like I would be able to do more reps that way.
Really? Okay.
Me personally.
Maybe.
This is me thinking a lot. I mean, I could sit there and hold that 20-pound dumbbell for a lot longer and go with that 20-pound ball and be able, and actually physically throw it.
Throw it? I guess it's true. So you're thinking like 200.
Like unbroken reps?
Yeah.
I'm going to do 200 wall balls unbroken.
No, with the dumbbell.
Oh, I don't know. Maybe so.
Yeah.
Something like that. But so anyways, kind of going back to the original thing with the butterfly pull. So that'll be kind of like your Wednesday skill piece. Mm-hmm. And then we'll pair it up with some more core work, so with some hollow body holds and some V-ups. The hollow body is such an important movement when it comes to all gymnastic stuff, and doing holds fucking
that's
suck
another one that
really
like,
bad
I think blows people minds when like you actually put them in the right position.
They suck.
It's a tough one.
And so we'll do some hollow body work, which would be a good pairing anyways for the chest of our pull-ups, mm-hmm. like that, so really hammering those positions and strengthen those positions up. So we'll kind of work alternating back and forth. So that same general structure, we'll have like those minute and a half long stations. And so it gives an opportunity where we're not going to necessarily put like a prescription on the amount of butterflies you have to do per se. It's just more of like the quality more than the quantity itself mm-hmm. when it comes to that butterfly pull up. And then Thursdays we'll basically flip-flop each month. We'll kind of go from upper body to lower body. So this past strength cycle was like Russian swings and glute bridges. This strength cycle will actually have upper body work. So we're going to do some rowing this time. It's not necessarily like biceps per se. We'll do like some supinated barbell rows and then the straight bar, like not barbell, but straight like the pull-up bars mm-hmm. and doing skull crushers off of those.
I think that's going to shock a lot of people.
Dude, those blow you
tough.
Up.
Those are tough.
Especially if you do it to where you go under the bar.
Like your head under the bar?
Head under the bar. That way you're getting that big, deep range of motion.
It's like a French press.
Yeah, so like for me, when I do them, I don't like going just the forehead. I actually like going underneath the bar. And that way you're getting that extra in range and then pressing out from there. The first 5 to 10, you're like, oh, these are
no
problem. But when you get to about like 15,
dude, they suck.
Dude, they blow up your triceps.
And the lower you bring the bars,
big
the
time.
Harder they get too.
Exactly.
Dude, man. And I like to because it's such a scalable movement. Mm-hmm. And so, like, everybody can do them.
Yeah.
And so that's such a good one.
And so it's great accessory work for, and like we talked about this before in other podcasts, but like it's a way for us to kind of go full circle with our programming, mm-hmm. right? Where we're not so hardcore into like the full 100% methodology of CrossFit, because I definitely think CrossFit is a great program, but it definitely has some holes that could be plugged. Mm-hmm. And this is kind of our way to help plug up some of those issues with CrossFit, like doing accessory movements. So like with CrossFit in a high intensity workout, unless you're doing supine rows, you're not doing a lot of horizontal pulling, especially like in an underhand position. So we do a lot of pronated, but we don't do a lot of supinated positions. So doing the supinated position will help kind of weaken up some of those links or strengthen some of those weak links. And then obviously with working on like bodybuilding type movements from time to time to help do work on like smaller muscle groups can only benefit the more bigger compound movements like your bench press or your strict press or your ring dip or your handstand push-up or your shoulder overhead. Then any pressing movement, having stronger triceps, stronger shoulders, all that's going to help you out, right? And so I think sometimes, I know we said this before, but I think sometimes people kind of gloss over the strength piece still.
Sure.
Because they're so concerned with the WOD.
I think it's getting better, but I definitely think it's still
a thing. And it's one of those things I don't know if it'll ever completely go away. But so many people gloss over that strength piece because they're trying to save themselves for the WODs. And what I always, like we said this before, but if you put more emphasis on your strength work and your skill work, all your WODs would become better,
right?
You would get better because of the strength stuff that you're doing.
Bigger sets. Like so many things, like your muscles aren't going to get tired as fast. Like it's such an important thing for y'all to do.
Well, the thing is, like, look at any competitive CrossFitter, right? Where look at Rich Froning or Matt Frazier or Tico Toomey, name any competitive CrossFitter. You know, they're training obviously for hours on end. They're training 5, 6, 7 hours a day, but not. They're not doing just Metcon after Metcon after Metcon. A lot of their training comes down to doing like skill progressions and strength work and accessory work, right? Because they know those are the things that are going to get them better in their WODs, right? Yeah, they're doing monostructural work. They're doing running, rowing, and stuff like that as well. But they're also spending their time on all these other things to improve on their WOD scores, to improve in competition, right? And so if you would put more emphasis in those buckets, your Metcons would also improve.
For sure.
So don't sleep on these things. Don't use this like, oh, it's just a warm up for me to go into my WOD. Don't think of it like that. Like, I understand you feel like you have more fun, or, you know, all that matters is your WOD score for the day. If you could kind of backtrack and look at the bigger picture here, and Jennifer's coming. Oh, not. There's Trey. What are you doing in here, Trey?
My prostate.
Oh boy, that would be a lot more benefit to you in the long run.
I think so.
But anything else you want to add to this? As Trey is interrupting your podcast right now. What are you looking for?
He's not
the
even
monkey foot.
Actually,
it's right there.
Wondering.
Good lord. Anything else you want to add to that?
I don't think so. I think we covered all the bases. I think a lot of people are going to sleep on Thursday.
People always sleep on Thursday.
I know, but I think a lot of people are going to come into that strength piece and be like, oh, it's not going to be that bad. And then they're going to do it the first week.
Oh, the skull crushers?
Like, oh, my God.
Dude, the skull. I remember the first time. I will admit, the first time I did those, the first couple reps, I'm like, oh, this really isn't going to be that tough. And then the thing is to get the program high enough volume. You mean,
sure.
You're not going to do like three
we're
or five
doing
of them.
15 to 20. So.
Yeah, we're doing higher volume. You can't, with that particular move, you kind of have to do a higher volume. It's kind of like doing, if I did like 5 V-ups, it wouldn't be that bad. It's kind of one of those things you have to program enough volume for it. But yeah, it's definitely going to catch people off guard.
Sure.
For sure.
That and then I wonder how many people are actually going to like go up and wait on the supinated rows.
Man, we program
that's
this good.
That's such a hard thing to get people to do is like to actually go up from week to week, I find.
Man, like we did those good mornings a couple weeks. This is back in September. Was it September or August search cycle? So I saw so many people just doing a damn empty bar
empty
the whole time.
Yeah.
I'm like, this, you're using it as a warm up.
It's literally a warm up.
You're just wasting your time.
Yeah. And I try my best in the afternoons to like really remember what y'all do. I feel like I do it.
Like, hey, last week you did 65
like
pounds.
I hone in on certain people. Like I know exactly like what they do from week to week because I know they have a bad problem with that kind of stuff. But sometimes you think, y'all slip through the cracks and I don't remember.
Do you think it's more because they just kind of go into autopilot and don't really think about it, or is it intentional?
Honestly, I think it's like Thursday's like the end of the week, and like everybody's kind of like drained at that point in time. Mm-hmm. So it's like, all right, I'm just here.
Just checking the box. So it's intentionally not putting weight on the
I think so. Okay. Like, I think if you were to put that on like a, like, let's say you switch to Monday, I think everybody's going balls to the wall on that work. On that.
So you think, particularly it's on Thursday?
Yeah, like, I think so. I think it's just end of the week. Like, and a lot of people, I don't know if you think this, but I think a lot of people don't want to be really sore for Friday fun day either.
Like, they're kind of conserving?
Yeah. Like, I think a lot of people almost like take an extra step back on Thursdays just so they can come on Friday and like not feel like run down. Because I think people still want to check the box to come on Thursdays and not miss. But also they're like, all right, I got a 30-minute email on Friday. Like, I need to make sure I'm okay to go, you know? But, oh, by the way, I don't know. That 30-minute email last week, it crushed a lot of people.
Man, I didn't feel, I thought it was, for me personally, I thought it was going to be a lot worse.
A lot worse, really?
I felt like I could have, now if that had been that email without the rest.
Well, that's what a lot of people said.
That'd have been really
bad. Said it was just, a lot of people were saying it was perfect, like perfect. Now, if you had taken the rest away, they said it would have been horrendous.
Yeah.
And the fact that rest gave them just enough juice to get back on the
road. Well, and also the fact that the fourth station was the bar muscle station, and you technically had like a minute and a half worth of rest, really, if you do the bar muscles unbroken in a fast enough time, that you had more of a 90-second rest, and that was an added benefit. If it had been the fourth station would have been a movement that would have taken, or if I'd have changed the order operations.
Lift bar muscle, double under.
Exactly, where that taken eaten up like 50 seconds of time, and you had that 20 seconds less of rest, I think that would have added up big time. See, for me, it was, because a lot of people were complaining about the row. And
dude, I got more people complaining about dumbbell snatches.
And the dumbbell snatches. Yeah. For me, it was the, for me, it felt like the fourth station was a double under station.
Really?
Like going from the snatch to the double unders felt like was the worst one. Just because the row snatch took up a good chunk of time.
Yeah.
And then going to that third station, you're already kind of fatigued at that point. And the double unders probably took a good another 45, 50 seconds. Sure. And then going to the bar muscle, okay, if I just knock these out, I'm going to have a 90-second rest.
Yeah, and there was also a lot of people just getting done with, let's say they got done with the double under station. They were taking 20 seconds. 30 seconds
before they got on the
just
bar.
Because they knew, like, all right, this isn't going to take that long. I'm just going to take my time, hop up, knock it out, and then I got my minute.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of people were excited that the emails were back. I will say that.
Oh, they like the emails?
I think at least in the afternoon. I don't know how the morning people like it, but I know a lot of people love emails in the afternoon.
See, I'm partial. I like interval / EMOM type movements or type workouts. It's just one of those things. They're a lot harder to program because it's so easy to either under or over program it.
EMOMs are the hardest one to like nail on the on the head, unless you've done them like week after week and you start to kind of get more of a feel for them. But man, at least maybe I'm crazy, but at least I thought, I don't ever hear people say I love AMRAPs or I love for time. Like normally when we do like a longer EMOM, like that gets spoken about. So I don't know.
I enjoy them. It's just like I said, they're harder to come by just because I know I've programmed some before in the past and I've over-programmed them where like everyone's like, this thing's impossible. And they destroy everybody in the process.
Which everybody and then last Friday saying it's impossible. And then they would get done with the workout and they're like, oh, I like that.
I know everybody, like anytime I do program an email, everybody always says, the first thing always everybody says is this is not possible.
I think it's just because of how long it is. I think that's a lot of
that's what she said. And, but then there's been some times where I program an EMOM and you kind of get done. You're like, oh, you know, it's all right. It wasn't too bad. And as a programmer, and it's okay to have workouts that are under programmed from time to time. I think those are fine to have. But there's that little bit of like, oh, man, I didn't do my job that individual day. If they kind of like, oh, you know, it wasn't bad. You know, it's pretty easy. You know, kind of like, it's kind of like that little piece.
You don't
piece
want it to be easy.
I don't want it to be easy, like, but I don't want to be
the hardest thing you've done.
Yeah, I don't want everybody to get smashed either. It's one of those things where I want you to feel like it was just enough. Like, hey, I pushed myself and like that was pretty tough. Like if you'd have programmed a little bit more, probably would have been too much kind of deal. It's kind of that line I like to ride. It's just a lot harder.
You want to know one of my favorite phrases to hear from somebody after a workout, but they think it's the worst thing, is when someone comes up to me and says, man, purple is really tough. It's really, really hard, but I really think I could have done brown. That shit drives me up because I'm like, you did everything right today. You hit the stimulus, you picked the right numbers, you did the right weight, and then after the workout, you're pissed that you didn't do brown. I'm like, you did so well because you scaled perfectly, right? And that's one that drives me up the wall.
Well, I feel like that's just natural how...
And that's anybody, right, that does that.
Well, you look at anybody who does a workout. They literally look like they're dying. Mm-hmm. And they'll get done with the workout and be laid out like, oh my God, I was so bad. And not 5 minutes later, like, I could have done better.
I could have done better, right? And so that's something that, like, kills me. I'm like, oh, man.
Well, if that's the case, then we might start bringing them back more.
I like them. I think a lot of people like them, so.
One thing we're going to have to start doing, though.
No, I don't think everybody wants to do them 5 days a week, but.
I think on Fridays, a lot of people would do. I guess one off topic, we don't have too much time here. And this is kind of what I talked about anyways. I guess we can talk on the podcast a little bit. Is start leaning into more level method testing.
Okay. That's always a touchy
subject. That was a question. That was a question. That wasn't a statement.
That's why I said that was a touchy subject.
Yeah.
I think it's needed. I don't think people want to do it.
Okay, why so?
I just don't think people enjoy seeing
regression
if they have.
If they've seen,
And I think, in a lot of times, I think that just maybe scares people away from showing up that day. Mm-hmm. Especially if it's like one of like the harder tests. I feel like just falls.
Well, and here's kind of, like for instance, there are some tests on there that people either hate to do, and they're like, I do not want to do that anymore. So the idea being, like, I think, like, for instance, like last time we did the road test, which has probably been a year or two now.
Yeah.
Last time we did it. So the road test is 20 minutes max meters, but we gave an option.
You could run with a mile?
It was a 20-minute AMRAP of road test or a 20-minute AMRAP. I think it was like double unders, burpees, and rowing.
And rowing,
right? So we gave the option to pick, right? And that was kind of the idea is...
But I remember like when we did that, everybody ended up doing the damn road test.
And that's kind of how it
goes.
And
so it's almost like we're tricking them into doing the road test. Almost.
Well, I think people like options.
Yeah.
I don't feel like that people want to be put into a corner and be like, you have to do this. Because at the end of the day, like... The idea for us is we're giving you the option.
Right.
We're not forcing to do anything you don't want to do. And that's kind of the idea with some of the level method testing. Like, for instance, the kettlebell test, which is a horrible test. 10-minute AMRAP at max, snatches, or swings. Is again another, you can do this test, or you can do a 10-minute AMRAP of kettlebell swings, box jumps, and running.
Sure.
Right, as an option. We're going to give you the choice. But inevitably, people end up going into the kettlebell test.
Blows my mind too. Everybody bitches all week, and then when it finally comes up, it's like not one person's doing the AMRAP.
Well, because I would love to see.
And I think it's peer pressure too. I think you're seeing all the other classes, right? Everybody in the class doing it.
Well, I would love to see a lot more people get their full overall color because there's
so many people that don't have a full.
I think because it gives you statistics on the back end a little bit. There's like 60-70% of people don't have an overall color. I think the only people who have the full color are people that originally started when we started doing level method because we went through all the testing as a gym. And we did maybe like two or three cycles of like the full testing.
Well, I remember we did the full cycle, right? And then we did the new board, so then we had to do it again. And so we did retesting on
it. We retested it. And we're like the third iteration we kind of went through. I think people were kind of ass-whipped on the testing. Mm-hmm. And so it's not going through like all the testing at one time, but like on a yearly standpoint, we go through at least one to two of those tests every year. Right. And so
I like that idea.
And, you know, it's kind of one of those things where if you don't want to do it, you don't have to do it if you really don't want to do the AMRAP. But it's one thing I want to kind of start leaning back into
it pretty soon. And I love the method just because, and I think so many people now use it with the colors and the color boards and everything that I think even if someone doesn't want to do the test, I think it's beneficial. Like it's an upper body pull test or it's something that we use, like a row or a run. I think people are going to be more inclined just to do it because we know we use that level so often.
You know? Yeah.
I think it's the ones like that we don't use that often that people are like,
like kettlebell tests.
Yeah, like we never use it really. And so people are like, I don't really want to do that.
Yeah.
If it's one we use all the time, people do
it. Yeah. So, well, cool deal, guys. Appreciate you guys listening in. We'll talk to you guys next time.
See ya.